Good afternoon, everyone. If you read the Wall Street Journal, then you've probably seen in there about this massive trial that's just gotten underway this week in New York City. It's a trial that started after almost a year and a half, 2 years after the arrest of this man. The accused, he's a Sri Lankan native. His name is Raj Rajaratnam, and he ran this massive investment fund called the Galleon Group. And he's being charged with 14 counts of securities fraud and conspiracy. And they're all centered around this insider trading ring that involved many of the largest and most well-known technology companies like Google and Intel and AMD, IBM, and a number of others. So Rajaratnam, he pleads not guilty to all these charges, says he's not guilty, but if he's convicted, he faces up to 20 years in prison. I think it's 185 years if it was served consecutively. So it's a lot of serious charges that he faces. And this case is interesting because it doesn't just involve him, but it also involves a number of other high-profile executives, board members from investment banks, consultants from McKinsey, which is one of the most respected business consulting companies in the world, stock traders, and wiretaps, billions of dollars. It's really the biggest insider trading case that's happened since the 1980s with Ivan Boesky, which was really the first large insider trading case. So the prosecutors, they say they have a really strong case, and they intend to prove that Mr. Rajaratnam paid all of these well-placed individuals millions of dollars to provide him with tomorrow's news today. That was how the prosecutor phrased it. They say they have emails and financial records and hours of phone conversations, along with numerous witnesses who in some cases were these well-placed men that were feeding him information. They say, you know, this is going to provide an airtight case. And so it's been interesting to watch this, and I've kind of been reading the news, following the story, and looking into some of the people who are involved. And even with all of this evidence, there's still actually a decent chance that they won't be able to get a conviction. Insider trading is one of those laws that isn't necessarily cut and dried. It comes down to these key phrases like material non-public information and the relationship of trust and confidence and knowingly breaching that trust. So these are all things that, in the end of the day, the jury is going to have to interpret whether or not all of the people involved crossed those lines. But as I read this, the thing that struck me is that these were men who were all in their late 50s, early 60s, kind of towards the end of their careers, and many of them had started in the U.S. as immigrants, came over here on scholarships to colleges, worked hard, achieved business success, rose to these leadership positions, they accumulated wealth. They had started charities, they'd done all of this, and now they face losing it all. And it's something where it seems like they started out with a degree of integrity and character, but just over time they kept inching closer and closer to this improper behavior. And as you hear some of them talk about it, it seems like they got to the point where it was almost imperceptible when they crossed the line exactly. They had success and respect and financial security, but they just kept pushing the envelope until they went too far. And now they've compromised all of that, their integrity, their character, their life's work, charitable deeds, and it's all minimized because of these recent actions that they've taken. So I wanted to see, you know, how can we use this to look at our lives? And as I thought about it, I think that there are two key questions that we can ask ourselves from this experience that these guys are going through right now. So I just want to look at these two questions today, pose them, and it's something that we can ask ourselves, and we can do it on a constant basis, but especially when we're examining ourselves before Passover. So the first question is, what will cause us to compromise on our integrity? What will cause us to compromise on our integrity? If you think about your character and your reputation, it's really the most valuable thing that you have. And what would come along that would cause you to taint that? Let's turn over to Matthew chapter 13. In Matthew chapter 13, Christ gives a parable here, and he's talking about the parable of the sower. He's talking about people who've heard the truth and people who have acted on it, and he goes through a couple of different scenarios. And I think that as we look at this, it's actually something that we can learn from and pay attention to in terms of things we should watch out for with our character and our integrity. We all know the parable, so I'm not going to read that. Let's just start down with his explanation of it in Matthew chapter 13 and verse 18. Matthew chapter 13 and verse 18. After he's given this parable of the sower, talks about the seed that fell in different places and how successful the growth was, he goes to explain what it actually means. Matthew chapter 13, verse 18. Hear you therefore the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and understands it not, then comes the wicked one and catches away that which was sown in his heart. This is he which received seed by the wayside. Then I really want to focus on these next three verses here. Verse 20. But he that received the seed in stony places, the same as he that hears the word, and anon with joy receives it. He hears it, he's excited about it, and he's really glad to have it. Verse 21, yet has he not root in himself, but endures for a little while. For when tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, by and by he is offended. So in this case, there's tribulation, trials, persecution, something difficult that comes along, and it ends up throwing these individuals off track, and they're offended, and they let it go, and they don't hold on to this precious truth that they've received. The same thing can happen with our character and our integrity. We can get into a tough time, a tough spot, and now what are we going to do about it? Are we going to take what appears to be an easy way out and maybe compromise, or are we going to stick on the straight and narrow path and trust God to get us out of it in the proper way? So I think that's one of the things that can cause us to compromise: trials, tough times, tribulations, persecution. And then we'll continue again in verse 22 of Matthew chapter 13. He also that received seed among the thorns is he that hears the word, and the care of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he become unfruitful. So in this case, there was someone who received it, but they got too caught up in the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches, greed. They wanted more. They wanted money. They wanted prestige and a position. And that choked out the word, and they became unfruitful. So in addition to the trials and the tough times, we can get pulled away by the world, by the things that look so shiny and tempting and appealing out there, and it can pull us away. And here it mentions riches, greed, covetousness, all of those things can take us away and pull us out. And that's really what we find at the root of this insider trading case that I mentioned earlier. These were men who, in some cases, had billions of dollars. They had billions of dollars. If you think about how much $1 billion is, how long it would take to spend that, how many years you could pay yourself $250,000 a year salary out of it. It's something that, you know, $1 billion is $1,000 million. If you pay yourself $250,000 a year, you're talking about 4,000 years that $1 billion would last. That's 2/3 of the history of humanity. And so these were men who, in some cases, had $1 billion, and yet they still felt the need to go and cheat and break the rules and push the envelope in order to get more. It's really something that you can not describe it any other way than greed. There's no need, it's just greed. So that's one of those things that can be so tempting and can cause us to compromise on that integrity. Let's turn over to Luke chapter 14. Again, these are the words of Christ here. Luke chapter 14, and we'll start in verse 25. I think in general, most people in the church, out of the church, they don't wake up and say, you know, I want to go do the wrong thing today. A lot of people, you know, they have good intentions, but they get pulled by the situations that they're in, by the greed that they have. Here it talks about the people in their lives, and all of those things tug on them until they get closer and closer and end up crossing that line. Luke chapter 14 and verse 25. And there went great multitudes with him, and he turned and said unto them, if any man come to me and hate not his father, or love less not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Why does Christ say it like that? Because if you love any of those things more than you love him and his way of life, then they are going to be able to influence you to go the wrong direction. They're going to be able to pull you away and cause you to compromise. So you have to have Christ and his way of life above everything else, above father, mother, wife, children, brothers, sisters, and even your own life, whether that's your physical life or your social life or your financial life or whatever it might be. It has to be below Christ and his way of life in priority. Let's just continue reading here through these verses quickly. Luke 14, verse 27. And whosoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, sits not down first and counts the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it? Lest haply, after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. So Christ is encouraging them to count the cost and to understand what it really means to live this way of life. Verse 31, or what king, going to make war against another king, sits not down first and consults whether he be able with 10,000 to meet him that comes against him with 20,000? Or else, or if not, while the other is yet a great way off, he sends an ambassador and desires conditions of peace. Verse 33, so likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsakes not all that he has, he cannot be my disciple. So we have to forsake all that we have, everything, physical goods, our ego, whatever it might be that we have to forsake it all. And that's the commitment level that we have to get to. And that's how we will stick with it and not compromise on it. And I gave a sermon at, I think, a couple years ago. I talked about contentment. I talked about this study that these researchers had done where they had for a long time been trying to study what makes people happy. And what they found out is that usually the things that people think will make them happy have no impact on their actual happiness over their lifetime. And the point of this presentation that this researcher gave was that people will go and compromise on their integrity and break laws and hurt others to get something because they think it's going to make them happy. And in the end, it has no impact on their real happiness. What we have to remember is if we want to be happy, if we want to live a fulfilling life, then the Bible tells us the things that we should have in our lives, tells us how we should be living, and that will lead to true happiness. And when you follow that way, then there's no compromise, there's no law breaking, there's nothing negative about it, there's nothing that's a bad side effect when that's what guides your life and your actions, rather than some desire that we have that we think is going to really bring us happiness. So the first question was, what will cause us to compromise on our integrity? The second question is, how close to the line do we try to get? Because insider trading is not always a cut and dried, black and white kind of offense, a number of these guys who are involved in this case, they're saying, well, sure, we had information, but it was not material non-public information, or it was not something that was covered by this relationship of trust and confidence, so it was okay for us to have it and to trade on it. And that's pretty close to the line of insider trading. Mr. Armstrong has talked about people who want to know where the line is so that they can get as close as possible to it without crossing it. And he said that he wants to know where the line is so he can go the other direction and stay away from it. You know, if there's an edge to a cliff that drops off and you're up there, I'm not a huge fan of heights. I wouldn't want to go walk right along the edge of the cliff if there's a nice wide path and I can stay back from it in a nice safe location there. But some people want to get as close as they can. And the problem is when you're that close, it's very easy to cross right over that line or to slip off of that cliff. Let's turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 6. 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 18. 1 Corinthians 6 verse 18 addresses this. It says, flee fornication. Every sin that a man does is without the body, but he that commits fornication sins against his own body. What I really want to focus on is those first two words, flee fornication. I looked up that word flee, and it means to seek safety by flight, to be saved by flight, to escape safely out of danger. So it doesn't sound like you're getting as close as you can to it. It sounds like you are fleeing so that you'll be saved. You're trying to get as far away from it so you'll be safe. And here it says flee fornication, but you could replace fornication with flee breaking the Sabbath, flee dishonoring your parents, flee lying, flee stealing, flee coveting. Put in any of the commandments in there, and that's our attitude that we should be developing. We should be developing this attitude of we're going to go away from them, not as close as we can to them. Again, this is something that Christ talked about. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 5. Say, well, how do I flee sin? Is it something where you just have to always be on the lookout and, and you take off running? There's a spiritual principle here that Christ lays out pretty clearly in Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 20, Matthew chapter 5 and verse 20, Christ says, for I say unto you that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. Well, what does that mean, exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees? They were so strict about keeping the letter of the law. We have to do that. But as we'll read in these next few verses, we also have to keep the spirit of the law. That's how you exceed their righteousness. Verse 21, you've heard that it was said by them of old, You shall not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment, and whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, or fool, shall be in danger of the council, but whosoever shall say, you fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that your brother has anything against you, leave there your gift before the altar and go your way, and first be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. So this is the principle of not hating. We shouldn't even hate. We shouldn't have this strong disdain for another human being. It's not just about physical murder, but Christ here is expanding it to encompass the spirit of the law. So that's how you flee murder. You avoid ever getting into an attitude of hate or disdain. And you can apply that to all of the commandments in any aspect of the law. You flee sin by keeping the spirit of the law. And that's how you avoid the edge of the cliff, and you stay well back from it and stay safe. And you know, if that's your attitude, and if you live your life that way, then what you'll see is that instead of being close to doing the wrong things, you'll be fully involved in doing the right things. If you're trying to walk as close as you can to that line, it's going to keep you from all of the good things, and you're going to miss out on real blessings that you receive when you're doing the right things. So you flee fornication, you flee murder, all of these things by keeping the spirit of the law and by doing the right things, and that brings you well back from that line. One final verse, let's turn to Revelation chapter 3. Revelation chapter 3 and verse 11. It's a very familiar verse here in Revelation 3, verse 11, right at the end of the message to the Church of Philadelphia. Revelation 3:11, Behold, I come quickly. Hold that fast which you have, that no man takes your crown. So if you think about having a crown, you would probably hold on to that if you really valued it. And you would treasure it, and you would try to take care of it. And that's what we have. We have a calling and the blessing of having our sins forgiven and the knowledge of God's way of life that is more precious than any physical crown. We have to hold fast to that. And if we hold fast to that, that will prevent that compromise, and it'll keep us in that safe zone back from the edge of the cliff. So whatever the outcome of this trial of Raj Rajaratnam is, there's no doubt that his reputation and the reputations of these others involved have all been tarnished. Their desire for friendship and more money and prestige clouded their judgment, and they had that willingness to walk as close to the line as possible, and that made it easy for them to just drift right across. So I think we can definitely learn from this case, and we can use it to reinforce our resolve to stay safely away from the edge, to strengthen our character, to uphold our integrity, and to hold fast to our crown.